Yana ho, yana wana ho, yana ne, he ne noa. Yana ho, yana wana ho, yana ne, he ne noa. Yana ho, yana ne, yana ho, yana, he ne noa. Ya he yo, ya e yo, ya e yo ha, hui ya e yo, ya e yo ha, hui ya ha, hui ya ha yo. Ya he yo, ya e yo, ya e yo ha, hui ya e yo, ya e yo ha, hui ya ha, hui ya ha yo.
Oh yeah. You're listening to Talking Music on your radio station, KVNF. And this is Bob Panetta, and I'm in the studio, happily in the studio, I must say, with Robbie Romero, activist, musician, and filmmaker. Robbie, it's such a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You've been in Western Colorado before, I guess, and you've actually, we're here at our old station. Few years ago?
Yes, I was.
Well, I wanted to start just by talking to you a little bit about your early days, because obviously you were influenced by some pretty strong personalities as you were growing up. And I would have to say, beginning with your mom, who was an actress, a Latin activist, and a strong supporter of AIM.
Yes, she was. My mom was an amazing woman, and she turned me on to many things.
She started you in the right direction.
She did. The first rock and roller she introduced me to was Elvis Presley.
Wow.
She was a contract player at MGM, and my mom kind of danced her way into show business and appeared in lots of Elvis Presley films. And she introduced me to so many incredibly talented people.
Well, among those, I imagine, of course, with Dennis Hopper.
Yeah, Dennis. Yeah, she introduced me to Dennis. She took me up to Dennis's house when I was 11 years old, and I stayed.
You stayed?
Yeah. I said, Mom, I think I'm going to stay here with Dennis. And Dennis was like, yeah, that's cool with me.
These are my formative years, Mom. I've got to have the right influence.
Dennis had just purchased the Mabel Dodge Tony Luan home on the Taos Pueblo Indian Reservation, and he had some incredibly talented minds coming in and out of that place and staying and visiting. And, there was so much music and art and literature, and it was just a wild, crazy scene.
How fortunate.
Man. Yeah, it was great.
Also, Jesse Ed Davis.
Jesse. Yeah, Jesse, I love Jesse. He, Jesse had a special gift when it came to music. He was a very talented guy, but he had a feeling that he can come into a studio and just take the song and just make it feel right.
Yeah.
He had the groove.
He was the first Native American rocker that I was introduced to.
Yeah, Jesse played on so many wonderful albums, and when Taj found him in Oklahoma, Jesse came from a very talented family of musicians, traditional and contemporary, and dancers. And, so he started playing with Taj and touring with Taj. And then Taj took him to England, and the Beatles stole him. And wow. He started playing with George and John and Ringo. And then he went to L.A., and he just became the hottest session player. Jesse had this little tape. Those old recordings for your phone to leave a message, and it would just be producer after producer, and be like Phil Spector and, Fraboni or whoever was calling, trying to get him to come down and play. And then there'd be like Bob Dylan, and be like, hey, Jesse, what's going on, man? I'm on the corner of Sepulveda and Santa Monica, and nothing's happening. And he kept these tapes of all these crazy messages from people, and He was amazing. I got to play a lot with Jesse, and when I was first starting to put some demos together, Jesse and I were writing some songs together. And he put together his band that went on to be the Graffiti band that he worked with John Trudell with. Yeah. But we came up with some cool sessions. He's just had a groove.
Yeah.
He was the Guitar Hero's guitar hero.
There it is. That's it. So you mentioned Rob Fraboni.
Rob, yeah.
And that was at Shangri-La, Shangri-La Studio. And did you record at Shangri-La?
I did. In 1979, I recorded at Shangri-La with Rob producing.
Wow.
I did a show at the Troubadour, and Doug Weston, you know, and my mom set it up because it was kind of a bar situation, and I was 16 or 17 years old at the time, so... you know, they put this all together, and it was, you know, a typical Hollywood kind of packed house. And
yes,
and I used Johnny Rivers' band, and then Rob, you know, called me a couple of days later and said, "You got to come out to Shangri-La, bring the guys, let's record some songs." And so we did.
I mean, starting at Shangri-La, I mean, this is a studio where Bob Dylan recorded, the Rolling Stones recorded, the band recorded. Robbie Robertson was doing stuff there all the time. I mean, how fortuitous for you to have them just open the door to, you know, a 17, 18-year-old kid.
It was an amazing time for me because I went out there with Dennis and my mom, and I ended up spending a lot of time with Rick Danko. And Danko was another one of these guys who was just living and breathing music. I mean, he was amazing, Rick Danko. He was a huge influence on me. His vocal style, the way he played bass, the way he played everything, it, just the way he was. He was an amazing cat, and I used to go over to Shangri-La a lot with Rick. Rob was doing his record, or had just finished his record, and they were working on some other tracks. I really love Rick and miss him.
Yep. There were some really, really special musicians around Shangri-La at that time.
Oh, man, it was...
No doubt about it.
It was an amazing place. It was an amazing time.
Well, would you mind doing another little tune for us?
Sure.
How about Heartbeat, man?
Okay, Heartbeat. You got it.
As a purple sunset fades, are we really here alone? On the main street of the world, relocated from our home. And all that's real seems so far away. Sacrificing tomorrow for yesterday. There's a heartbeat louder than thunder. Revolution is in the air. And there's a heartbeat deep inside our mother. Are you too cool to care? You weren't so clever, never speak too soon. You one who knows better. Sliding in and out of the room. With your friends close, your enemies closer. Ah, be careful now, not to force her. There's a heartbeat louder than thunder. beside our mother. Are you too cool to care? Roll back the darkness. We've been blind for far too long. Socialist, communist, democracy can't be right when it's all wrong. And the spirit they could never really see. Well, you can't take away from me. There's a happy light of thunder.
What a great tune. When did you first record that tune?
I first recorded it just to see if it made sense at all in L.A. When was that? Like 1991 or two, something like that. I was in L.A. writing a bunch of songs with some friends, and we were hanging out there.
Is that the session that Al Kooper played piano on?
Al Kooper played piano on another version of it that's on the 25th anniversary coming out this month.
This month?
Of the EP, yeah.
Now you've got everybody.
Al's great, man.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, Robbie, man, you know, I'm glad you called because, like, you know, no one calls me anymore ever since, like, Rolling Stone. I was like, give me a break, Al.
That's too much. Well, so you got Don was producing and actually singing and playing on that.
Don's amazing. Release, huh? He's amazing. He's great. And Layla Nabowski, who's a film producer, she produced Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas and some of the Saturday Night Live stuff. She put the whole session together. And she did an amazing job. I mean, we had, you know, Studio A, Capitol Records, you know, live session. It was really cool. She took me over to Don's office. And Don and I had met years ago, like when I was, like in the early 90s when I was looking for someone to produce the first stuff. And I was up at Shep Gordon's house. And he brought Don over and I played some songs for Don. And we were entertaining the idea of doing a record together. And then he got very busy. And it never happened. But years later, we came together with this, and Layla took me up to his offices at the Capitol, and I had Dennis Banks with me. Dennis is, as you know, the leader of the American Indian Movement, and we lost Dennis last year. But, you know, he's on his journey, and he's strong, and that was amazing last couple years with Dennis. But we were at Capitol, and Layla and Don, and they're saying, well, who do you want on the record, Robbie? And I was like, well, how about Danny Kuchmar? And so Layla calls Danny, and Danny says, well, you know, are you playing bass? And Don says, yes, I'm playing bass. And he goes, well, who's playing drums? And Don says, who do you want on drums? And I said, well, how about Jim Keltner? And then I didn't realize I was, like, kind of putting regrouping the wrecking crew. And then, you know, Cooch called Jim, and then someone, I don't remember who, brought in Jim Cox on keyboards, and then I brought Robert Maribal with me on traditional Pueblo flutes, and I brought Gary Farmer on harmonica. I brought my daughter Dakota on vocals. I brought in a young First Nations singer named Takaya Blaney. She's amazing. And Ray Saragossa, who's actually doing very, very well right now with her first record. And a lot of Water Protectors from Standing Rock. And people like Francis Fisher showed up, and Bobby Newworth, and Chris Christopherson.
Session,
we brought in Chris Christopherson to sing. And
how was there room for everybody?
You know, Layla made she created a vibe that was just beautiful for everyone to hang in. Rosanna Arquette was there. There's a lot of people just coming in and hanging out. And, you know, the catering was great and organic. And it was a beautiful session.
Nice. And that'll be released later this month.
Yeah. My favorite line of the whole session was like, there was two things that happened that were really great. One was, you know, I was like, I think everyone's mispronouncing Minnie Wiccioni. And Don's comment was like, you know, tomatoes, tomatoes. and when we did that, we had some ceremonies. Dennis led a ceremony, and Robert had a ceremony, and I did, and we kind of all prayed together. And you know, don't want me to let everyone know why we were recording the song, that it was written at Standing Rock, and it was about treaties, and it was about honoring the 1851 treaty, and about a campaign leading up to the Trail of Broken Treaties 50th anniversary, which will be in 2022, in September. And, you know, that it involved a petition campaign, and we were going to challenge the United States to honor one of the more than 500 broken treaties they had made with Native nations. And this was one of Dennis's last wishes and instructions to me to make sure that, you know, we released this Born on the Res. But the song was 11 minutes long. It was many, many verses.
Wow.
And so we, you know, Don, you know, tells us his arrangement. Everyone gets in their places. He gets a groove going, Don and I in the gym. And we, you know, get Chris in the booth with the girls, and we start recording. And then at the end of this, like, 11, 12-minute song, Don goes, okay, that's a wrap.
Beautiful.
We're like, what?
Beautiful.
And I walked into the control room where Ed Cherney, who's also amazing engineer, and just amazing engineer and producer, and we were all hanging out in there, and I'm standing against the wall with Cooch and Jim, and Don's talking to us, and everyone's listening to this track going, this track is amazing. It had just the vibe. The vibe was amazing, and Jim's drums on it. It was like, you know, we took Bo Diddley right to the res, you know? It was like this incredible vibe going on, and Cooch is like, so what's next? And Don goes, well, we'll mix it, release it, and we'll hit the road. And then one of them says, oh, the usual.
There it is.
And I looked at those guys and I said, yeah, the usual.
It's only That's rock nice. And roll. Hey, it's a great cut. I can't wait to hear 11 minutes of it.
We wow. actually have that version. We did a music picture of the long version because Dennis Banks sings this beautiful traditional tale on the vamp. It's about 2.5 nice. Minutes long at the end, and it's just beautiful. And this is his last recording.
Wow, I'd love to hear that.
The last film we got on him.
Losing Dennis and John Trudell the same year.
Well, John, oh yeah, maybe. No, I think John was the year before.
Year before, yeah.
2016 or 2015, yeah.
Yeah. So, 1990, you were the United States Ambassador of Youth for Environment, is that, do I have that right?
What we launched, the Is It Too Late music picture from the Kremlin to about 150 countries during a forum called the Global Forum of Spiritual and Parliamentary Leaders.
Was that under Gorbachev?
That was under Gorbachev. Yeah, and this was in January of 1990 when we launched, when he had the forum.
Uh-huh.
And so we were all in Moscow. I was there with a delegation of 20 indigenous leaders and clan mothers and chiefs and spiritual leaders. And there was people there like Dalai Lama and Mother Teresa and Carl Sagan. It was the first time I heard words like climate change, actually.
Yes.
It was in 1990 there in Moscow. But after it aired there, then I did Earth Day 1990 on the steps of the Capitol. And then I was invited to the United Nations to their Children and Environment program, and they gave me an award, and they gave me this title, United Nations Ambassador of Youth for the Environment.
That's beautiful, man.
It was a beautiful scene. I had Richie Havens with me. We closed the forum in the General Assembly with a song we just came up with, you know, back in the delegates lounge.
Here, let us try this on these people.
Yeah, it was a very cool thing, and I wanted our leaders to speak at the General Assembly, so I accepted the certificate of appreciation and the title, and I invited Chief Warren Lyons to speak and address the youth from all over the world that they had brought in. I spoke too when I accepted it, but I invited Warren to give the keynote. Our elders and leaders have been knocking on the UN's doors for decades before there was the United Nations, you know, to try to get the rights of indigenous peoples recognized and honored. And we finally did in 2007 with the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples was finally passed. And now we have a forum called the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues at the United Nations. And there's a lot of international matters being discussed when it comes to the rights of Mother Earth and the rights of indigenous peoples. And what I think, you know, is important about that is that, you know, the natural resources that are left, the last pristine wild places that are left on Earth are in indigenous territories. And, you know, there's extractive industry, fossil foolish industry. These kind of industries are really trying to get every last drop out of the earth at the expense of the generations to come. Respecting the rights of indigenous peoples, honoring the rights of indigenous peoples, advocating for the rights of indigenous peoples protects all of us from environmental genocide.
And that's happening. We have it happening at Bear's Ear
exactly.
Right now in Utah. And it's a sacrilege. It's terrible to take a sacred spot like that and go ahead and just and mine it and strip it and rape it. As when it comes to raping your mother.
You know, it's important to recognize and honor our places in the sacred circle of life and you know, come to understand that we are accountable and responsible to our relations, all our relations, and to the generations to come. So, you know, there's hope. I have hope. You know, I believe, you know. And I think that, you know, there is going to be a time when all the colors of mankind will gather under the sacred tree of life and the whole earth will become one circle again, as Crazy Horse stated.
So beautifully put it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. All comes from the heart, man. And as long as we keep strong and keep moving forward, people like you are out leading us and... I think we do. We have a bit of a future there. We have something to look forward to.
We have each other.
Cry about. That's without a doubt. Now there's a heritage, a Native heritage celebration coming up this month. Is that right? An anniversary of some kind?
Yeah. United States of America celebrates November with a proclamation of Native American Heritage Month. And it started in 1990 with the Bush administration, and then President Obama elevated it and brought more attention to it. You know, whatever political, you know, feelings you might have out there, I think what's important is that if we're going to have a Native American Heritage Month, then let's celebrate the contributions and the sacrifices Native peoples have made to the United States of America, and let's start getting a more factual take on history, because all we've gotten is his story.
Yeah, and not your story, but his story.
Well, you know, the United States, you know, when it was formed in 1776, you know, began by putting in their declaration when they declared their independence, the 13 colonies from Great Britain, they made some very profound statements. But they also said that, you know, merciless Indian savages, you know, and when they made that and wrote that phrase in there, it wasn't on accident. The Declaration of Independence was revised over and over again. I think it was like 86 times or something like that before it was signed on July 4th. But the promotion of the merciless Indian savages, the promotion and the propaganda of indigenous peoples are less than human, as if that's a justification for, you know, genocide and or the attempted genocide and the rape of Mother Earth and the theft of land and resources and on and on and on. Theft of our children and put into boarding schools, and the attempts to deculturalize and outlaw religion and spiritual practices and languages. You know, all these things haven't worked. Yeah. We're resilient. You know, indigenous peoples are brilliantly resilient.
Incredibly resilient.
And we are invisible no more. But it's a good thing to understand, you know, how the United States came to be and how that affected indigenous peoples. Because right now the United States is the richest country in the world. And at the same time, Native peoples are the poorest within their own territories of Turtle Island, North America. And neither of those statistics would be true but for the theft of our lands and resources.
Exactly. And we forget who it all really belongs to.
And it's not a blame thing. It's not like, you know, you're responsible. You know, what it is an accountability thing. It's about respect. It's about understanding, you know, it's about how we're going to swim
together.
You know, these shores together, you know. You know, climate change and tornadoes and Mother Nature is not prejudiced.
No, no. And Mom's pissed.
And who's going to negotiate with, you know, with the hurricanes? Who's going to negotiate with the tornadoes or the volcanoes? We shouldn't be trying to conquer nature. Humanity should be trying to live in harmony with nature.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think Mom knows that there are some of us who really want to do that.
Yeah,
want to be there.
There's a lot of wonderful people in this world, beautiful people that inspire me and just make me smile and make me happy to be alive, you know, and those are the people I kind of move towards.
And you are one of those people, and I thank you very much for being here with us today. And do you think we could close with Medicine Woman?
We can give it a shot.
Let's do it, man.
Okay.
Touch me with your power, heal me with your hands. Oh, this could be the hour. Wrap your light around me like a ring around. Have I come too soon? Keep me closer if I should. I travel through this world of hurt and betrayal. If I should stumble, if you should fall, we shall not fail. Touch me with your, touch me with your power, Yahweh, Yahweh, Yahweh. Touch me with your power,
thank you, Robbie Romero. Such a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.